And it's a conference of people who've been involved in the Occupy Wall Street movement in different cities in the Midwest and elsewhere. So people are coming in to share their stories, workshops on practical concerns. And since one of the conveners is Mark Enslin of School for Designing a Society, there'll also be some entertainments in the evening. It's also tomorrow, 12 till whenever, listed as 12 to 12. So come and go, I guess. Hang around. As I mentioned, out on the street in front of Walmart on Prospect, there's a demo between 2 and 4 of Occupy Champaign-Urbana. It's time to go. Past time to go. It's time for the labor hour. And Occupy the Airwaves. I'll have more details, I guess, on all of the above or all of those recent announcements. There's a WEFT Airshifter training class coming up. There's a fundraiser, Bluegrass Roots Extravaganza, tomorrow at the Iron Post, 5 till 9, starting when my show starts, so I won't be there for the first hour. Four bands, $10, no kidding, and proceeds benefit WEFT. You can write Airshifter Training at weft.org to find out about that. And if I didn't do the announcement, I guess I didn't do my supporter announcement today. Write community partners at weft.org. It's time to go.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the January 28th, 2012 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WEFT 90.1 FM radio in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at WEFT.org. The views and opinions expressed during this hour program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WFT's management, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, call area code 217-469-6111. That's 469-6111. And this hour of programming is brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE, celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that we enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Tom Thomas. We'll have some workers' interest news for us later in the show. The Labor Hour Cultural Corner, Tom's brand new poem for this week is entitled For Voters to Ponder. Also here with us today is Bob Pelesny, co-host, as well as co-host Bill Gorell. He's also the co-founder of the Illinois World Labor Hour. And we have a very special guest, a new co-host here with us today, Pat Simpson, who's going to be a regular here on the Illinois World Labor Hour in months and hopefully years to come. Now here's Tom to kick off this week's edition of Workers' Interest News.
Indiana's Republican-controlled House of Representatives cleared the way last Wednesday to become the first right-to-work state in a traditionally union-heavy Rust Belt, increasingly targeted by non-union foes. The House voted 54-44 to make Indiana the nation's 23rd right-to-work state after Democrats ended a periodic boycott that had stalled the measure for weeks. The measure is expected to face little opposition in Indiana's Republican-controlled Senate and could reach Governor Mitch Daniels' desk shortly before the February 5th Super Bowl in Indianapolis. Republicans have struggled with similar anti-union measures in other Rust Belt states like Wisconsin and Ohio, where they faced massive backlashes. Ohio's voters overturned Governor John Kasich's labor measures last November, and union activists delivered roughly 1 million petitions last week in an effort to recall Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. Republicans outnumbered Democrats in the Indiana House by 60-40, but the Democrats have just enough members to deny the Republicans the 67 votes needed to achieve a quorum. So maybe the unions will win on this one.
Thanks, Tom. In a surprise move, a surprise settlement reached Monday, the Longshore Workers Union, the ILWU, and transnational grain exporter EGT announced they'd settled their legal disputes in Longview, Washington. They expect to negotiate a contract that will cover ILWU members working at EGT's new grain terminal there. The conflict had raged since last June, with hundreds of ILWU members mounting a campaign of nonviolent disruption. The settlement came as the ILWU and members of Occupy Movement separately prepared to confront a grain ship approaching the disputed terminal. Although only 25 to 35 jobs are immediately at stake in Longview, the ILWU feared losing there could endanger the grain work that accounts for 20% of the financing of its pension and welfare funds. Jurisdiction was the key issue. The ILWU had insisted that EGT honor its commitment to work its new high-tech terminal with ILWU members and not the operating engineers, which the port's contractor had hired after EGT walked away from talks with the Longshore Union. The operator engineer local now appears to have no future at the port, and officials there did not return calls by press time.
Yeah, it's a really ugly situation.
That has been going on for a long time. You know, there was all kinds of things where they had stopped trains coming in there and emptied grain out of trains, and stuff had been going on. Actually, a lot of the county prosecutor dismissed train obstruction and trespassing charges against the Longview member Darren Norton last week and extracted guilty pleas to minor charges from seven other workers. But, yeah, that's been going on a long time up there.
Yeah, and this has been a problem going back, you know, a while. I know this happened over in Staley, during the Staley lockout in Decatur back in the early 90s when you had the Staley workers out on strike, or which were locked out, as well as the disputes with Firestone workers and the UAW at Caterpillar, where you had building trade, local building trade unions crossing the picket lines to do maintenance work there to keep the scab workers and the production going, which is very ugly. This should never happen. A union should never cross another union's picket line. But anyway, a revision of Indonesia's labor law that paves the way for outsourced workers to have equal benefits with permanent employees expected to improve the lives of millions of workers. The amended law would also reduce the conflicts between laborers and employers in Southeast Asia's largest economy. On January 17th, the Constitutional Court declared outsourcing unlawful under the country's constitution because it would create uncertainty over the faith and livelihood of the workers. Timbul Stegar, chairman of the Indonesian Workers Association, said the revision of the law was a victory for 16 million outsourced workers, or roughly 40% of the country's formal labor force of 41 million. Tom?
Mark Pierce, chairman of the National Labor Relations Board, hopes to have another round of regulations in place by the end of this year that would make it easier for unions to establish and win representation elections in American workplaces. Undeterred by Republican protests, Pierce said he will urge the board to approve the new rules now that it has a full component of five members after President Obama bypassed the Senate to fill those three vacancies. In an interview with the Associated Press, Pierce said, "We keep our eye on the prize. Our goal is to create a set of rules that will eliminate a lot of waste of time and energy and money for the taxpayers." One major change that Pierce wants is requiring businesses to hand over lists of employee telephone numbers and emails and addresses to union leaders before any election. He also wants the board to consider any other rule changes it did not have time to approve before it lost its quorum last year. Those include the use of electronic filings and much quicker timetables for certain procedures. Bob?
Thanks, Tom. I got a story here that says government cuts kept U.S. union rate at record low in 2011. The rate of union membership in the U.S. fell to a record low in 2011 for a second straight year, as the loss of government jobs partially offset a rise in private sector employees, the Labor Department said. Labor unions represented 6.9% of employees in private companies, unchanged from 2010 and down from 7.2% in 2009, according to data released on Friday by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The rate in the public sector was 37%. The total union membership rate, reflecting both public and private sector workers, was 11.8%, down from 11.9% in 2010, although the number of unionized workers went up by about 50,000 to 14.8 million. Workers in education, training, and library occupations had the highest unionization rate, the Labor Department said. Among states, New York State had the highest union membership rate at 24%, while North Carolina had the lowest at 2.9%. The report also showed that average weekly earnings of union workers was $938, while non-union workers were paid $729. So quite a difference there.
Indeed. Tom?
Hey, CU at Home is seeking about 100 volunteers to help with its upcoming fundraiser for the homeless. One Winter Night is scheduled for February 3rd and 4th. The event will be held in downtown Champaign along Neal Street as more than two dozen people spend the night sleeping out in the cold in cardboard boxes. CU at Home is hoping to raise awareness about the community's most fragile homeless and to raise the money to house more than a dozen people who have been identified as the most likely to die in the streets. Participants who will be spending the night in boxes include Champaign Mayor Don Girard and Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride and several area pastors. CU at Home founder Melanie Jackson said volunteers are needed to help with a variety of tasks, such as helping receive donations and serving as warming station hosts, between 5 p.m. on February 3rd and 7 a.m. on February 4th. Help is also needed with setup beforehand and tearing down afterwards. Each participant will be in his or her cardboard box from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. and then will remain in the box for an additional hour for every $100 raised on his or her behalf for up to 10 additional hours, or $1,000 raised. For more information about One Winter Night or to make a donation, go to the website at www.cuathome.us. Bob?
I'm going to pick on Apple again this week. You know, it was mentioned in the State of the Union address, and then Mitch Daniels in his rebuttal said, quote, "The late Steve Jobs, what a fitting name he had, created more of them than all of those stimulus dollars the president borrowed and blew." Well, Apple employs 43,000 people in the United States and 20,000 people overseas. However, many more people work for Apple's contractors. An additional 700,000 people engineer, build, and assemble iPads, iPhones, and Apple's other products, but almost none of them work in the United States. Instead, they work for foreign companies in Asia, Europe, and elsewhere at factories that almost all electronics designers relied on to build their wares. Jared Bernstein, who until last year was an economic advisor to the White House, says, "Apple's an example of why it's so hard to create middle-class jobs in the U.S. now." He says, "If it's the pinnacle of capitalism, we should be worried." He says, "Apple has released a damning audit that found almost 100 of its supplier factories forced more than half their workers to exceed a 60-hour work week. The company announced responsibility for aluminum dust explosion in Chinese supplier factories that killed 4 workers and injured 77. Hundreds more in China have been injured cleaning iPad screens with a chemical that causes nerve damage." Says Apple was subjected to This American Life radio special this week about the abysmal factory conditions in China. And last weekend, a front-page New York Times story asked the company why they offshored all its manufacturing. They say it's due to flexibility. Tens of thousands of workers there live in factory dorms on site, where they're woken up in the middle of the night and forced into 12-hour shifts when Apple decides a product needs tweaking. They say, however, you know, Apple looked much more seriously into these things than a few years ago when it shrugged off 18 worker suicides at its main supplier, Foxconn, in China. So,
wow.
Maybe they're making some inroads.
Well, I just found some equal time here to pick on Bill Gates. Okay, this is from PackAlertPress.com. Bill Gates, a heavy Monsanto investor who purchased 500,000 shares of the biotech giant, that's Monsanto, has been touting Monsanto's genetically modified creations as a tool that is necessary to prevent starvation in poor nations. The same poor nations where thousands of farmers routinely commit suicide after being completely bankrupt by Monsanto's overpriced and ineffective GM seeds. The same company that we recently exposed to be running, quote, slave-like working conditions, forcing poor operators to operate, or workers to operate the cornfields for 14 hours per day while withholding pay. According to Gates, this is the company whose GMO crops are going to save the world from starvation. Of course, along with saving the world from starvation, GMO crops also bring along a large number of unwanted health and environmental effects. Anyway, Bill Gates wants to push those on third world countries.
Yes, Bill Gates is also behind the whole effort to privatize public schools with public dollars. He made that outlandish propaganda film, Waiting for Superman. And yeah, I have no use for Bill Gates. But
yeah, well, here's something, Dave, because what people often bring up to you is, oh, well, Bill Gates, he's giving away all this money and all this money. Yeah, well, Bill Gates is one person. That's not like any type of public control or democratic, small d democratic control of how those resources are allocated. Mm-hmm. And apparently some of this stuff has to do with him continuing to enrich himself. I'm sure that will.
Oh, indeed, indeed. Okay, we're going to go to a little Jim Hightower and then Tom Thomas's poem of the week, and we're going to be having Harry Kelber from New York City call in at 12:30 the hour. But first, I'd like our new co-host on the Labor Hour, Pat Simpson, just to introduce yourself to the listeners. Welcome to the Labor Hour, Pat.
Well, thank you, Dave. When I think back about where I've been and what I've done, it sure does make me feel very old. I realize that I've been involved in labor education for about 30 years now, going back to IBEW Local 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then recently I've been involved with Jobs with Justice, and are we going to make an announcement about that event?
Yes, indeed.
It's going to follow up.
We're going to do that under public service announcements after Tom finishes his poem. That's the usual.
Okay, that'll be really good, because that's going to be a very important event in terms of giving support to local workers who are involved in a union organizing drive. I know Bill going back to the days when there was a consent decree that required some monitoring of elections and the laborers, and I was involved in that, partly pulled in because of my involvement with the labor education program here at the U of I. And I've been a labor educator in many, many different forums, Cornell University's Trade Union Women's Studies program, again, the apprenticeship training program, and Harry and I were involved in, and we'll be talking maybe a little bit about that.
Yeah.
And it just turns out that I'm going to be doing some online courses for the labor ed program again here at the U of I. So
okay, great.
I'm keeping my hands in the soup, as it were.
Okay, well, welcome aboard. And now we're going to go to a little Jim Hightower. Stay tuned.
Obama must okay that Keystone XL pipeline from Canada to the Gulf Coast, barked the corporatists in Congress, because the Exxons and Chevrons need a way to get all that Canadian tar sands oil to their Texas refineries. That'll increase the supply of gasoline and lower the price at the pump. It's economics 101, bucko. Really? Well, consider this complicating fact. Rather than shipping an abundance of gasoline to our gas stations, Big Oil has quietly been siphoning oceans of fuel from their U.S. refineries, shipping it to Asia, Europe, and Latin America. Last year, for the first time ever, fuel became the top export of the United States. The big refineries shipped 117 million gallons of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel per day out of our country. Suddenly, fuel exports are bigger in dollar value than the foreign sales of American aircraft, agriculture, or any other product. Commuters, truckers, farmers, airlines, and others who are dependent on these fuels have been soaked in the past year by gasoline pump prices that have averaged $3.52 a gallon, a record high. This price shock has given Big Oil's political puppets an excuse to yap ceaselessly about the urgent need to build that pipeline. The environment be damned is their cry, full speed ahead to increase supply. These ranters don't mention, the giant refiners' control and manipulation of our gasoline supply for their own fun and profit. While the refiners refuse to reveal how much they profit from exporting fuel, the more they send overseas, the less there is here at home, allowing them to jack up our prices. No surprise, then, that the Big Five gasoline makers enjoyed record profits in 2011. This is Jim Hightower saying, rather than ripping apart our environment to serve these finaglers, America urgently needs a full conversion to alternative fuels.
Okay, we're back, and we now are going to the Labor Hour Cultural Corner with Tom Thomas's new poem of the week, For Voters to Ponder.
To educate for tomorrow is what our society needs to totally quell the sorrow that has grown from poverty's seeds. The fat are just getting fatter as they're feeding off of the poor. To fat cats, it doesn't matter as they're taking more and more. A pack of dogs in a dogfight are squabbling to win a throne. Though proven wrong, they claim they're right, so they should not have to atone. It's time the rich ones paid their tax and the poor be given a break. The billionaires should pay the max for our dim economy's sake. It's time that we went back to work and had a chance to seize our dreams. From laborer to office clerk, it's time we overcame some schemes. Where American jobs belong is here in the United States. To send them elsewhere is just wrong and threatens us with dismal fates. Educating for tomorrow will spread the knowledge that we need to avoid that hungry sorrow capitalism is known to breed. For voters to Ponder was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on January 25th, 2012, and was brought to you live today, January 28th, 2012, here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Here locally at the Flexingate plant, most recently renamed Guardian, workers stood up and reported safety hazards, and there have been some changes. But after many years of working with dangerous chemicals, workers are finally starting to get basic training and some equipment to protect them. These changes are great, but they aren't enough. And these changes would never have happened unless workers made their voices heard, but there's much more to be done. A union contract can help ensure that the Flexingate does not take away these improvements at any moment. So if you want to come out today at 12 noon at the Holiday Inn on North Lincoln Avenue, you can join co-workers from the UAW's organizing campaign to listen to the Flexingate worker stories and learn how to the workers can protect themselves. This is an organizing event. They're going to try to be getting as many Flexingate workers there as possible, as well as members of the public, to show their support behind the organizing drive. With an interesting update, after we were flyering the plant on Thursday, found out that that evening management of the plant told all most of the workers that they had to work mandatory overtime on Saturday, today, starting at 11, an hour before this event. So, yeah, that's a little bit of a coincidence there. But it, yes, so come on out, you know, to the Holiday Inn today at 12 noon. It's on Holiday Inn at North Lincoln Avenue in Urbana, and come out and show your support for these workers trying to gain basic rights of protection on the job and decent wages through a United Auto Workers union contract.
Dave, you know, there was a big jump in pickup truck sales that day.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, so they had to make a lot of bumpers. And
oh, yeah, okay.
By the way, there used to be a volunteer here at WEFT who worked at that Flexingate plant, and I remember that I don't know what it was some kind of repetitive strain injury, but he had his hand was all wrapped up for quite some time.
Uh-huh.
And then I remember, too, there was a younger laborer who worked out there for Champaign Asphalt at the time. And they were putting in parking lots. I'd actually worked out there for Stark, doing a lot of the concrete drives and those roads and stuff out there.
Uh-huh.
And actually, then it was called Guardian West. That was the name of the job. And but anyway, this younger laborer, he quit Champaign Asphalt, which is a pretty gravy job. And he got a job there at Flexingate. And I think he worked there about a year or two, but he came back to the laborers. So
uh-huh.
I guess he found out it really wasn't what he liked. And I'd been in the plant. I know somebody who's a local lawyer who had worked there years ago in the chrome plating department, mm-hmm. which is really toxic.
Yes, indeed. Okay, I think that's Harry Kelber calling in New York City. Okay. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, good.
Yes, Harry, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I feel fine, and I'm ready to go.
Okay, very good. Well, we have a former colleague of yours from the Labor College here, Pat Simpson, with us. Pat, you want to say hello, Harry?
Hello, Harry. How are you doing?
Good, pretty good. I really don't remember where we worked together.
Well, it was at...
My memory is fading a little bit.
Well, you do remember the apprenticeship program, Local 3 apprenticeship program.
Oh, yes.
And
very important.
I worked
at that time I was the director of the Educational and Cultural Fund.
That's right.
And I also taught classes in the apprenticeship program.
That's right.
And
we always...
one of the finest in the country.
We always enjoyed your classes.
You played a very important role in that.
Yes. Well, I worked with Greg Mancios and Betty Front when Richard Dreyer was also the dean.
Yes, yes.
All right. So that sort of at least locates me.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm so glad you reminded me.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Harry, listen. You know, we were talking before the show a little about Harry Van Armsdale and stuff, and, you know, we got to get you back on the show someday to talk a little bit about him, because he seemed to be a real interesting labor leader.
Well, I spent a lot of time with him. and he and I worked to develop a labor college in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and
Harry,
a lot of other things. So
yes, yes.
He was a wonder. I considered him one of the finest labor leaders that this country has ever produced.
Wow, that's saying a lot coming from you, Harry. I mean, that's quite a compliment. But listen, we had you call in today because you've written an article here last week, which I found really intriguing and very timely, is about the whole issue of income inequality in the United States.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about this article you wrote recently and kind of what inspired you to write it.
Well, it inspired me to write it because we have a great division within our society. There are people earning millions of dollars and getting bonuses and all kinds of advantages. And on the other side, we have workers who are barely making a living and struggling hard. And we have unemployment. 3.9 million people are unemployed. And we have almost 45, more than 45 million people who can't have unemployment coverage for health. And their poverty is increasing. We have over 15 million people who are poor, and a hell of a lot of them are working and not earning enough to support a family. So there's a great division within the society. Now the question is, why is it so? That's the question I wanted to explore. Rich people can justify their wealth and their greed by two simple arguments. Well, there may be more. One is the notion that they are a superior breed, and that falls on the social Darwinian approach, you know, that the survival of the fittest. There are people in our society who are very talented and very competent, and they move ahead, and they take advantage of the society and all of its benefits, and forget about the millions of ordinary people who are suffering and not making it out. So, that's one thing. But more important, isn't it true that the United States is boasted that it is the land of opportunity? And here are these people, rich people, who are taking advantage of it. Why do you blame them if they make a lot of money? They're doing it for their own purpose, and it's quite all right. And at the same time, by their investments, they are also helping the economy. They create new benefits for people. They're creating new institutions. They're advancing America's way in the base in the world. So I think they have justification for their wealth, and they want to keep it that way. And so, in addition, of course, they increase their wealth by decreasing the amount they pay their working people.
Yes.
So that's the beginning. But now the question is it fair? I don't see how anyone can justify this kind of division. And the question is, what can be done about it? Well, from my observation, the unions are accepting this division, and they're mainly concerned with winning a wage increase for their workers. They're not questioning or challenging the changes in our society that give the rich all the benefits and keep the poor in check. Why shouldn't the unions be more forthcoming?
Indeed, and you know, in your article, I thought this was really intriguing too. You wrote, besides talking about the whole issue of this inequality of creating more poverty, is also you write, why do the rest of us find it hard to maintain a middle class income lifestyle or put aside a nest egg with sufficient savings when we retire? One reason is that the haves, the wealthy, don't want us have nuts. to get affluent. They increase their wealth by keeping wages and benefits as low as possible. So it seems like, Harry, you were kind of alluding to the fact that politically, let's say political and economic power, if the wealthy can keep us impoverished or barely making it, that we won't be able to have as much political and economic power as they do.
Right, and the union leaders, many of them, are accommodating to this arrangement. You see, in Germany, I don't know whether you're familiar with this, there is a policy of co-optation.
Yes.
Which means that they have a general board in each company where the leadership, the directors, are equally divided between employers and representatives of the union. And as a matter of fact, the chairmanship of the board often changes. Sometimes it's in the hands of the employer, and sometimes a union representative acts as chairman. I think we should study that a little bit more carefully and see what we can derive from it that would benefit American workers.
Okay.
But to get back to that,
mm-hmm.
Here we have a society where American workers are really keeping the economy going. They bake the bread, they truck the products around the country, they teach our kids. Working people do all kinds of things which are necessary to keep our economy going. And they get almost no credit for it. As a matter of fact, they have to struggle to get their employer to give them a decent wage. The employers are fighting them tooth and nail. And as a matter of fact, the unions are being forced into concession bargaining, which means they're trying to even lower the contributions of working people in terms of wages, benefits, and working conditions.
Yeah, Harry, Pat wanted to ask you a question real quick. Pat?
Sure.
Well, it's not so much a question, but I just wanted to very much agree with you on this point that it isn't fair. And it isn't fair precisely because if you look at what's been going on in terms of trends in the United States, the American economy has grown in the last few decades by something like 60%. Corporate profits are up about 20%. And productivity levels have also gone up enormously. Yeah. And productivity comes from the sweat of working people. And yet, essentially, wages have been flat over that period of time. And that is, I think, a real clear argument for why you got to say, hey, where are the gains to working people in terms of the sweat that they put in to increase productivity?
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. And the unions have an alternative. Either they play the game of the employers and negotiate as best as they can for a pittance for their union people, or they embark on a new approach to our economy. I believe, and maybe I'm way out of line, but I believe that workers should have a greater share in the operation and ownership of each company where they're employed. Now, that's a kind of a revolutionary idea, but it's based upon actual common sense and fact and social justice. Why shouldn't the people who are producing the product continuously not have a share in the ownership, and that it should only go to people who do less for the company than the working people do?
Well, indeed,
we deserve an equal share. And it's time for the union leaders to consider this and not to play along with the notion that employers know best and that employers will run this country as they fit, and particularly the rich ones. Now, look, we just had President Obama make a speech of the State of the Union, a very fine speech. But there's one question dealing with inequality, which disturbed me. let's put it this way. America is a land of opportunity. Everyone has a chance to become rich or become part of the middle class. What you have to do is work hard and play by the rules. You've heard that over and over again.
Oh, indeed.
Now, what do we mean by work hard? Has that ever been defined? Who decides about working hard? The employers. And they always consistently say workers are not working hard enough. Whereas we know from the statistics which Pat just cited that American workers are very productive and they are highly responsible for the economy, for the economic conditions in this country. So, and but more important, who makes the rules? It says play by the rules. Tell me who makes the rules. The employers.
And who follows the rules.
And who follows the rules and takes advantage of the rules and all that.
Yes.
This is malarkey.
Yes.
This is soft-soaping, playing to the audience, and there is no indication, although President Obama says that every American will have an opportunity. Every American will have a chance to be trained. Well, that's what he's saying. But given the political situation in the United States, it doesn't seem to be very likely.
No, it doesn't.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I think, Harry, you're absolutely right about the ultimate goal of having American workers actually be more own more percentages of the economic activity in this country. I mean, to get the unions to the union leadership to push for a goal like that, I mean, they've got quite a few steps to take before that. I mean, when another article you've written just recently, in fact, was what the unions need to do in order to organize Walmart. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yes. Now, the United Food and Commercial Workers have been trying to organize Walmart, which is the biggest retailer in the world. They've been trying to organize it for years and failed. And they're now trying again. But the new method is to try to get the insiders, the employees, who, by the way, are called associates, fancy name, and to try to build up something. But that's going to come to naught. And for this particular reason that I will now give you, there are 15 countries that have Walmart. And you cannot organize Walmart on one basis. You've got to organize them all. And you've got to fight them all with all of these Walmarts and all these countries working together. That's the formula for organizing Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And until the UFCW people agree that to follow that PEP policy and to become familiar with what the workers in all of these countries are doing about their employment in Walmart, they're not going to organize anything. And my suggestion is that a committee be set up in the UFCWA to work for a coalition of the 15 countries that have Walmart stores as a starting point. We have to know what's going on. And, I'm going to tell you that there's a rumor on, it hasn't been substantiated, that Walmart has made union contracts with management in these stores. That would be nice to investigate. But certainly we should know what the conditions are in each of these countries.
You're talking about
wages are higher. What are their problems? How can we work together and beat Walmart?
You're talking about unionization of stores in other countries other than the U.S. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. All right.
Now, shall I give you a figure?
Sure.
10,000.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 stores, and we can could only organize two. In the years of spending money, resources, organizing activities, and so on, that's all we were able to do.
And, and those two were in Canada, if I'm not mistaken.
One was Canada, one was Texas.
Oh, in Texas? Wow, that's surprising.
Yeah, and it's still pending. They want it still pending. Okay. The one in Canada, they shut it down. And also, Walmart took action for the one in Texas, which is now up before the National Labor Relations Board. So that's not, haven't they figured it out that you can't do it? And that the only way is to get the 15 countries together. And because Walmart would have great difficulty in combating 15 countries on this issue.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Oh, indeed.
And I think it could be a winner.
Yes.
Provided the unions were ready to follow it. And I'm strong on that.
Okay,
Harry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Bill Grell, and I just found an article here from 2006 on Walmart pulling completely out of Germany, just saying that the United States model just wouldn't work there. That's mainly employee relations, of course.
Well, there are all kinds of problems that Walmart has abroad, and in some cases, for instance, I would think that the UFCW should have ties with the Mexican Walmart people, because 2,000 of the stores, Walmart stores, are in Mexico.
2,000 are in Mexico? That's surprising.
Yes. Wow.
And it's across the border.
Yes.
And it's not a question of sending them out to, Spain or other countries, Madagascar. It's right across the border, and they should, for all other reasons as well, establish a close relationship with the Mexican Walmart people.
Well, that would be an excellent start, Harry, since, like you said, they're just across the border. But, listen, Harry, we've just about run out of time. How can people read your articles that you post every week on the internet?
I'll give you my website.
Okay.
www.laboreducator.org. Now, let me tell you, I have all kinds of articles in there. For example, in the past 5 years, I've written 750 labor talk pieces. They're all archived.
Oh, wow, excellent.
And I've written stuff over the weaknesses of the AFL-CIO and the problems of leadership and a lot of other things. And so there's a wealth of material which deals with which is valuable for other unions and for other activists, things which they are unaware of and which can be very helpful in building a strong labor movement. I would hope that it would follow through on that.
Okay, well, Harry, thank you so much for calling in today. Pat, any last words?
Well, it's just good to hear your voice again, Harry. It hasn't changed
pleasure.
Hardly at all.
And I want to compliment you for running this program. I think it's a great contribution, and it helps educate our working people, and they certainly need to have more information.
Well, indeed,
you're
Harry.
You're doing a good job, and continue.
Okay, well, thank you, Harry, and we'll be in touch.
Good.
Take care.
Dogs of Tijuana, filled with garbage and stones, in the streets and in the fields, cursed and crushed beneath the wheels, but together we are strong. Our songs echo in the darkness, down the maquiladora's halls, where Brother Solomon was tortured. One tree in the orchard casts a shadow on the wall. Hard and long, but the dogs are coming home.
dogs of Tijuana, left for dead in the ravine, in the arroyos and the valleys, the sewers and the alleys, we shiver and we dream. So don't stop to ask directions if you think you lost your way. The wrath of the lion is the wisdom of God, and every dog has its day. Dogs are coming home. Across the tin can cardboard slums, into these pastures came, into the hands of wicked men, sold by the hands of strangers. There'll be no silver lining, friend, of that I'm sure. So shake my hand one last time, 'cause brother, this is war. We are the dogs of Tijuana, watching every road.
Okay, that was Tom Morello from his new CD, Worldwide Rebel Songs. The name of the song was We Are the Dogs of Tijuana. I thought it was an appropriate song for this issue of income inequality. So, Bill, what's been going on? What's on your mind this week?
Well, what's on my mind right now is a quote here from somebody who was at a Mitt Romney rally in Florida. And anyway, the quote goes, "We've been hearing that for the last 50 years, Dick Copley said. Those darn rich people. I tell them, I know rich people. They're smarter than me. They work harder than me. They get better ideas. They get up earlier than I do. They didn't inherit it, and they're not crooks. And they also create jobs. It's class warfare, and Obama is best at that. He loves class warfare because his base is on the base. And those folks put him in." And, you know, that's just, I think, you know, that's just, you know, so much of an American culture, especially with Republicans. I just, you know, I mean, he's even saying that they get up earlier than he does.
Well, you know, it's funny, this whole thing, Harry was alluding to
this. They didn't inherit it. Like Mitt Romney, he wasn't born on third base.
Well, yeah, in fact, his father was a representative, I believe, in the state of Michigan.
He was governor of Michigan, okay. And he ran American Motors, I guess, into the ground, apparently, because they don't exist anymore. But it was really weird. I think his father ran for president.
Oh, he did?
I believe, yeah, but in the 60s. And but what's strange was he was born in Mexico.
Oh, he was.
Yeah, George Romney was. Yeah, but I after talking to Harry too, that quote just kind of strikes me. You know, this huge admiration for the wealthy and the job creators and.
Oh yeah, well, you know, it reminds me of a quick conversation between the writers, F. Scott Fitzgerald and Ernest Hemingway when they were in Paris in the 1920s. Where F. Scott Fitzgerald said to Hemingway, "You know, Ernest, the rich, they're much different than we are." And Hemingway says, "Yeah, Scott, they have money."
Yeah, and there's an old saying. Well, there's an old joke. There's two bums sitting on a bench. One bum says to the other, "It takes money to make money." And the other bum says, "Well, if you're so smart, why aren't you rich?" And the first bum says, "Because I can't afford it."
Jeez. Well, you know, that is true. I mean, this society, I mean, I guess in all capitalist society, there's a certain amount of, wealthy worship, if you will. I mean, I even see it in Europe to some degree, but nothing like here. I mean, oh my God. I mean, it's taken to it almost to the level of a religion. I mean, you see it. It's not just reflected in, news, you know, corporate media news commentaries and biases, but it permeates our culture, even our cultural entertainment, as was.
Dave, yeah. Yes. But I'm thinking, remember the 1970s where you had shows
about working class people?
Right. Yes, you had a whole lot about of them. Before.
Yes. And, oh, yeah. Laverne and Shirley.
Archie Bunker.
Yes.
And, you know.
Yes. And then come the early 80s, what do you get? Dynasty. Right. Dallas. Falcon Crest. All these shows about these wealthy individuals.
Conniving people.
Yes. Yes. Ruthless conniving people. Yes. And that's quite an interesting point. Pat, what do you think about, just your thoughts here?
Well, a couple of things. One is that I heard something this morning on the radio saying that the Republicans have a new approach to the class divide in the United States, and that is that there are two basic divisions in this country. It's the rich and could very well be rich.
Could very well be rich.
The land of opportunity.
Yes.
But one of the things I'm thinking of, particularly based on what Harry was talking about better working conditions in Europe, easier to organize, Walmarts get organized there, not here. I was looking at the productivity data and also working hour data, and we all know that in many of the Western European countries, there's many more days off, vacations mm-hmm. are longer, you get paid maternity and paternity leave and all this sort of thing. But what's really interesting also, I think, a statistic that hasn't been talked about as much in terms of this whole issue of income inequality in the United States, social mobility is now easier in Europe, old Europe, than it is in the United States. So this notion of opportunity, soon to be rich.
Yes.
Boy, we're falling behind on that one.
Well, yeah. Along with a lot of other indicators, for sure.
Well, there's an interesting article I read this week. It's on the Common Dreams website, and it's titled, How the Swedes and Norwegians Broke the Power of the 1%. And it's talking about how beginning in the Norway's a different country. It was largely rural at the time. They were kind of the Appalachia of Europe, maybe. Mm-hmm. And but in the 1930s, they was started a huge class struggle, nonviolent tactics, and they succeeded and created a really decent nation where they do have their 1% under control. And that's just one thing I really admire about the Europeans. They're not sitting back, you know, like a lot of working Americans. Like, you'll have a Herman Cain say, well, it's your fault that you're not rich. And somebody made a comment on an article I was reading on a website the other day about how they wanted everybody to be in the 1%. And my reply was, well, that's not mathematically possible, for one thing.
Yeah.
But it's just like that, and it's this feeling put on you that it's your fault. You should be guilty. The rich are hardworking, so you must not be hardworking. And I'm who cares about this hardworking stuff? We ought to have a 20-hour work week by now. Mm-hmm. You know, with all the automation and everything that we have, and that's just it. It's just that the European people, they seem to have some feeling of pride in themselves that at least a large majority of Americans lack, where they're just as good as these rich people and they deserve, you know, their bigger piece of the pie, and not trying to just rely on the pie all getting bigger while the rich suck up even more.
Yes, indeed. Well, we've run out of time. You've been listening to the Illinois World Laborer on WFT, listener-supported community radio in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at weft.org. We're going to end here with a little piece that Bob Pelesny brought into us, Gingrich the Newt, I believe it is. And then you can stay tuned for Champaign-Urbana Occupation Radio. So tune in next week, and work safe, and power to the people.
We'd like to set the record straight by singing of the Newt.